Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We've heard a fair amount about David Bowie this week on the show. The philosopher Simon Critchley's book on Bowie and the opening of the big Bowie Museum exhibit in Chicago were both things that we talked about in the past few days. But if you just know Bowie through his hits, you know, Fame and Let's Dance and Changes, then you should check out our website, because I made a list of 10 of the best deep cuts from Bowie's albums, the songs that really show the genius of David Bowie. It's on our website at soundcheck.org. Meanwhile, on the air, we've got a live set from the award-winning Rokia Traore from Mali. She's a singer and guitarist, but she's also set up an institute in Mali for young musicians, so she's a bit of a mentor as well. Now, if we're going to talk about mentors, and we are, then we have to start right here at home with one of the jazz world's great teachers. Grammy-winning jazz trumpeter Clark Terry has a career that spans all the way back to the 1940s. He started out playing with Count Basie and Duke Ellington, went on to become the first African-American staff musician at NBC, playing with the Tonight Show Band. He mentored musicians like Miles Davis and Quincy Jones, and is one of the most recorded jazz musicians in history. But Clark Terry's many musical accomplishments are just one part of a new documentary film about him called Keep On Keepin' On. Joining me here in the studio today is the filmmaker, Al Hicks. Al, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Yeah, g'day. Thanks, mate. Thank
you. So you were here some years ago in your other role as a jazz drummer.
Yes, yeah.
So is that how you met Clark Terry, working with him?
Yeah, I met him on a chance meeting in New York at the Blue Note, and we became friends, and he ended up inviting me over for dinner and eventually asked me to bring my sticks, and I started studying with him, and then he asked me to join one of his groups.
Now, Clark Terry is a trumpeter, but you're a drummer.
Yes.
And the film also involves his relationship with a young pianist. So the idea that you could study with someone who doesn't play your own instrument, it seems a little, I mean, we see that in like Indian classical music all the time, but normally, you know, a trumpeter studies with another trumpeter, a drummer studies with a drummer, et cetera. What is it about Clark Terry that enables him to kind of bring all you guys in?
Well, he's one of the masters of the craft, and he's just spreading the jazz language, essentially. And the way it just transcends an instrument with Clark. He can teach any and every instrument purely because he's always singing to you.
Mm-hmm.
He's singing the phrases that he wants you to play, and he's one of the last greats, and so full of history that anybody can, even people that aren't musicians, get a lot out of Clark.
Yeah. Now, so did you set out to just make a pretty straight ahead Clark Terry documentary?
Well, yeah. Firstly, it was to be just about Clark, and I'd spent a year filming just about his life story.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, the way the actual idea came about is that an Australian doc channel approached me about doing a small piece on mine and Clark's friendship, but that fell through because they didn't have funding to kick it off. And I was surfing with a mate of mine called Adam Hart, who ended up being the director of photography.
Just to be clear, when you say surfing, you don't mean surfing the web.
No. I was surfing in Australia. So we were having a conversation in the surf, and I was telling him, hey, this documentary idea fell through about Clark Terry, but it's a great idea. Maybe. Mm. And he said, mate, I reckon we could do it ourselves. So we saved up some money and bought a camera, and this is our first film.
Mm-hmm.
And we just started learning how to make a film and started shooting in increments.
And as we will discuss in a moment, what started out as a fairly straight-ahead documentary turned into something way more
human and poignant and almost as if it had been scripted in Hollywood. We're speaking with Al Hicks, the filmmaker behind the new documentary, Keep On Keepin' On. There are some sections of the film where we get, you know, kind of straight-ahead documentary stuff, including a great part where Clark Terry talks about growing up in St. Louis, building his first trumpet out of, like, stuff he found in the dump, and then trying to teach himself how to play.
Now, back then, there weren't any books about jazz, so if you wanted to learn, you had to ask the old-timers. And the old-timers in those days were not as helpful. Like, one old dude told me,
"Oh, sir, you go home and practice, you sit down in your chair, feet flat on the floor, while you're practicing, you look in that mirror, and you wiggle your left ear and grit your teeth."
When I realized that was some jive ass, I decided if I ever learned enough about jazz, I wouldn't keep it a secret from anybody.
And that sort of becomes his life's mission. In addition to being one of the great trumpeters of all time, he becomes this kind of musical guru.
Yes, he does. And when we first started shooting, that first year was focused on Clark's life and trying to gather as many stories about his life as possible. But we were able to back up all of the archival stuff of him playing his horn, but everybody would say he's one of the greatest teachers of all time, as well as being one of the great trumpet players. And Justin and myself, we went to school together.
That's Justin Coughlin, yep. Who is the blind young pianist who becomes the other star of this film.
Yes, and we both played in Clark's band together. And I was fortunate enough to have introduced Justin to Clark when Clark was really starting to lose his sight. And Justin came in as a support network for Clark as he was starting to go blind. Mm-hmm. So
Clark Terry was suffering from diabetes, which is why he was losing his sight.
Yes, right? Yes.
And Justin had lost his as a boy through a rare degenerative eye disease.
Yes, he lost it when he was 11. So when they had met, Justin had been blind for 7 years. Justin would always be studying at Clark's while we were doing this year of shooting to get his backstory. And then one day we just asked Justin, "Do you mind if we shoot with you as well?" And he said, "Oh man, I don't know what you guys are going to get." he kept saying, like, "I've just got me and Candy, my guide dog." And we said, "No man, we're just going to start just following you if that's okay." And thankfully he said yes.
I would follow Candy the guide dog anywhere. What a great dog this is.
She's beautiful.
And you know, Clark falls in love with her too. Everybody falls in love with Candy the guide dog. But you know, so Clark is in his late 80s when you start.
Yep.
In failing health, losing his sight. He's struggling to keep his legs, you know, because the diabetes has infected both of his feet. And while he's struggling through all this, the kind of transformation in his face, in his mood, when Justin comes to his house in Arkansas to study with him is really astonishing.
Yes. That's something that because I had been a student of Clark's, I'd walked the path a little bit of seeing how it works, like how a teacher does. He gets a lot from his students, you know, and that was baffling to me at first. I was like, wow, this is one of the greatest of all time. He doesn't need to teach. He could just get by with his horn, you know, but he gets so much from having his students around and watching him with Justin over this course of the 5 years, having them see how they would support each other through some of the toughest moments in both of their lives. It is astonishing to me being on the other side of the camera. You know, it was an amazing thing to see.
And they do. They are both, during the course of this 5 years, they are both faced with pretty terrific challenges, which maybe we can talk about in a moment. But in this scene from the film, Keep On Keepin' On, by Al Hicks, my guest on Soundcheck, we hear Clark Terry and young Justin Coughlin, the young pianist who's studying with him, talking about a question that comes up in musical circles every now and again.
I've been thinking about this, E.T. Mm. You know, there's masters, and then there's amateurs.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's a lot more amateurs than there are masters.
Yeah, it's
true. And I've been trying to think, what really makes the difference?
One thing is desire. desire to excel. You gotta want to play better than everybody. You gotta try hard. See, I want to play better than that one. You know, I'm gonna do the best I can. Some of them don't do the best they can, and some of them don't give a shit. Some of them can't if they try it, you know, because they don't practice. They don't study it enough. They don't study themselves enough. They don't know what their shortcomings are.
So that's real important to note. Yeah. To know yourself.
You have to know yourself, right?
Now, that scene, like so many other scenes in the movie where Clark Terry and Justin Coughlin are talking, ends with Clark asking Justin what time it is. And inevitably, the time is like 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning. It becomes like a running gag, Al, in the film.
Yep.
So it's like a completely nocturnal lifestyle, it seems.
Yes, it is. And the way when we first started shooting, Clark's known in the jazz world for only sleeping 3 hours a night for his whole life. And I didn't believe it. It was a rumor. But then once we started shooting, I was like, oh, man, that's true. And so we would shoot all day, and then we'd have to go to bed. And, you know, me and Ad would go to bed. And in the film, there's a shot of Justin sleeping on a couch. But that's where me and Ad would sleep as well. It's a long couch. And when you'd be in the middle of the night, and I'd hear Justin sneak into Clark's room, and there's a lot of scenes where they're playing together and jamming. So we got into this rhythm where I'd get Ad, the DP, to cradle his monopod and
DP
camera.
DP being director of photography.
Yeah, director of photography. I'd get him to cradle his monopod and sleep with it and have everything ready to go. And I'd hear Justin go into the room at like 3 a.m. and I'd tap Ad on the head and say, hey, mate, we're good to go. And he's like, no worries. And within a minute, we'd be shooting again.
Right.
And that's how we were able to get a lot of those intimate moments. Not many cameramen would put up with that kind of thing. We're lucky we're mates.
So we're speaking with Al Hicks, the drummer and filmmaker, first-time filmmaker behind the extraordinary new documentary called Keep On, Keepin' On, about the trumpeter Clark Terry and his relationship with the blind young pianist Justin Coughlin. Keep On, Keepin' On is opening Friday, October 3rd, here in New York at the Sunshine and Lincoln Plaza Cinemas. And you alluded before to tough times. Justin has lost his sight. He is named as a semifinalist in the prestigious Thelonious Monk piano competition. He doesn't make it to the next round, so he's got this big kind of, you know, he knows what the problem is. It's his own nerves have gotten in the way. As he puts it, my mind, you know, my brain has gotten in the way. Clark loses both of his legs to diabetes during the course of the filming as well. So they're both dealing in their own ways with, you know, real kind of roadblocks in their life and in their development as musicians, as people. And the way they come together and kind of talk to each other is really, you know, it's more than like master and student. There's like a real friendship there, right?
Yes, Clark, what we were talking about before is Clark getting energy from his students.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what the situation is. There's lots of times where we'd turn up and Justin would walk into the room and Clark would go from being completely down to right up there and singing again. And it happens in the hospital. It happens anywhere. Like, Justin was able to be such a support, but it's not an isolated case. You know, it's his students that
right.
bring him up.
But Justin's also getting, you know, continuous support from Clark, who is, you know, facing these terrible medical issues, and yet he's still sparing like the mental energy to kind of, you know, tell Justin, hey, it was good that you did it. You know, you've learned a lot, and now you move on.
Yep.
And we see Justin moving on, and we hear Justin, who actually scores the film for the most part, right?
Yes, yeah. He when I approached Justin about scoring the movie, his nerves were the first thing to come out. I'd say, hey, man, I've got a scene. It's this long. It starts good, ends bad. We need it to be, I'd give a bunch of descriptive words. And the first thing he'd say is, oh, man, no. I've never done this. And I say, just send me some tracks. and 20 minutes later there'd be 10 tracks in my inbox and they all work. I'd be like, oh man,
yeah.
You know, it's just the nerves. But he did the majority of the score, and Dave Grusin also did the string arrangements, which we're so honored to have some greats involved.
Well, in this scene from the film, Keep On Keeping On, Clark Terry is lying in his bed, Justin Coughlin sitting there beside him at some time, again, in the middle of the night, and they're trying to figure out the name of a song that Clark had once taught to the late pianist Mulgrew Miller.
I don't think it was tune.
Teaching him that tune. Sailing, did it have to do with, like, Breeze?
Breeze, that's breeze. That's it. You hit that right on the head.
We got it.
Breeze, ba-do-do-da, you stole my heart from me, ba-do-do.
Yeah.
When I woke up this morning, she was gone. There'll be more to blow my baby back to me.
That's the tune.
That's a pretty tune. Yeah. I still want to play Nobody Knows.
So that Justin is not playing the piano in the room there with Clark. That's the soundtrack that he's created for the film after the fact.
Yes, yes.
So he's able to sync up perfectly with Clark Terry lying in his bed singing this old song he'd forgotten about. It's just a wonderful moment, and there's so much in there, including the way Clark, you mentioned this before, Al, the way he can teach anybody, regardless of their instrument, because he does this, what is it called, the doodle tongue?
Doodle tongue system. Yeah, it's Clark's system of phrasing, and he uses it. It gets slightly explained in the film.
A little bit, yeah.
But it's his original system of phrasing melodies that the way he explains it, it helps you swing and helps you sit in the pocket. And, people that have mastered that, along with Clark, are some of the greats, you know.
So when you hear Clark, when he sounds like he's forgotten the words and he's just doing the doodle-doo-doo-doo, that means something to anyone who's studied with
him. Yes, it does.
A group that includes not only Justin Coughlin, but also my guest, Al Hicks, the drummer and filmmaker behind this documentary, and the great Quincy Jones, who appears, you know, kind of as one of the talking heads, you know, about how important Clark was earlier in the film, talking about his career and stuff. Quincy talks about studying with him when he was, what, 12, 13?
12 years old, yeah.
But then Quincy becomes a producer. I guess he thought, hey, what these guys are doing is...
Yeah, we approached him towards the end of shooting and just asked if he'd like to come on as a producer. And part of what was going on, because it's my first time making a movie, I wasn't paying attention to any music rights or anything. I just put everything I wanted in there.
Right.
And, you know, Miles Davis, Duke Ellington, like all those estates, man.
Yeah.
Quincy, through his relationships, he was able to talk to a lot of these estates and say, hey, this is a great project. And we were able to keep a lot of the music, well, all of the music. I didn't have to pull anything.
Well, now, and this sort of gets us back to, you know, where these characters end up. Clark ends up out of the hospital, back at home. We see him late in the movie with another student. So, you know, the passing of the torch continues to another generation. And Justin ends up going on like a global tour with Quincy Jones.
Yeah.
So where is Justin these days?
Justin, he's actually he's going to be here in New York for the opening, and he'll be doing concerts after every screening this opening weekend. And his career is just starting to take off, and it's good to see this humble dude, you know, that's really starting to blossom. And another great thing for me is that all these students of Clark's have been able to band together, you know, Quincy being Clark's very first student. And before Clark taught Miles Davis, he taught Quincy Jones. And, you know, Justin's a student, I'm a student. There's hundreds of students that have helped us get this up and going. We did a Kickstarter campaign in the middle of it. And so to me, it's my way of saying thanks to my teacher. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know the other students feel the same way.
Now, I know you're still in touch with Clark Terry. How is he these days? He's 93, right?
93, about to turn 94. I spoke to him yesterday, and we were talking about we're releasing a soundtrack for the film coming up. So I was explaining a lot of the songs that are making it onto the sound, and he was just singing up a storm. Every time I mentioned a song, he'd sing the whole thing top to bottom. And then he said that, Hicks, I know you've finished the film now, so time to get back to practicing. I was like, oh, I'm still a bit busy, CT, but
all right.
But I've got to get back to practicing because Clark's on my case.
We'll get Al Hicks back behind the drum throne eventually, but for the moment he is the man behind this remarkable documentary called Keep On Keeping On, about the great trumpeter Clark Terry and the young jazz pianist Justin Coughlin. The movie opens Friday, October 3rd, here in New York at the Sunshine and Lincoln Plaza Cinemas. Al, great to have you back with us on Soundcheck in this role. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, mate. Thanks for having me.
So, now we know about Clark Terry as a mentor and a teacher, but we didn't get much of a chance to delve into his long musical career. Up next, we'll hear highlights from the trumpeter's time playing with everyone from Duke Ellington to Ray Charles as part of our How to Be Smarter series. And stick around for a visit from the Malian singer and guitarist Rokia Traore. That's coming up on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. So, we just talked with the filmmaker behind that new documentary, Keep On Keeping On, about jazz trumpeter Clark Terry. But for those of you out there who might not be completely familiar with Clark Terry's long and illustrious music career, we thought we'd bring you up to speed. It's another of our How to Be Smarter segments, and here today to help us get a little bit smarter about Clark Terry is author, music journalist, and professor Ashley Kahn. Ashley, welcome back.
John, always a pleasure.
So what is the number one, I mean, what's our elevator pitch here for someone to go and pay attention to Clark Terry?
Clark Terry, one of the most individual trumpet sounds in modern jazz from the past 60, 70 years.
Now that, you know, even in the documentary about him, there's numerous people saying, You know his sound immediately. How does that happen? I mean, he's playing the same trumpet as everybody else.
Well, there's this thing in jazz where they talk about how you can really tell that it's a Sonny Rollins solo.
Yep.
If you know Sonny.
Yep.
And if you know Wes Montgomery, you know that warm generosity is going to come through his playing. Or the belligerence of Charles Mingus, mm-hmm. or assertiveness, or whatever you want to call it.
So if you're able to, you know, define, say, the clarity of a Wes Montgomery or the belligerence of a Charles Mingus, what's the word you would use for Clark Terry?
For Clark Terry, I would say there's almost this pluckish joy that comes through in his playing. And probably the best way of like substantiating that is that when Duke Ellington did his famous Such Sweet Thunder suite in the early 50s, which was his tribute, of course, to all the works of William Shakespeare, that when he wanted to put the character of Puck, you know, into a musical context, he deliberately chose Clark Terry. And Clark, in various interviews, he's so funny because he repeats what Duke, you know, used to call his musicians, sweetie, sweetie, listen, I hear you. You are Puck. And it took about a half minute of convincing, but in his very convincing way, he convinced Sweetie, a.k.a. Clark Terry, that he would be the perfect Puck in that musical role.
Well, the first excerpt that you chose for us to listen to is Duke Ellington introducing Clark Terry in 1954 for a live performance of the song Perdido.
Clark Terry now returns to the microphone and answers a heavy request for his conception of Perdido.
That is Clark Terry with Duke Ellington's orchestra in a live 1954 recording of Perdido. There's something, Ashley Kahn, almost husky about his tone on the trumpet there.
Well, very masculine, you know, very much coming from the idea of like, just showing who he was,
yeah.
You know, and he was a ladies' man, and may still be, you know. I'm not going to take that away from him.
Well, now, he started out playing with the Count Basie band in the late 40s.
Actually, Charlie Barnett, but he was definitely a swing guy in the 40s. Charlie Barnett over to Count Basie, some incredible octet sides, small group sides with Count Basie. From around 49, and then on to Ellington through most of the 50s.
So going from Count Basie to Duke Ellington, was that like being, was that like going from the Brooklyn Dodgers to the New York Giants?
No, I think that, you know, the scene then, there were a lot of people who were being shared, a lot of talent,
Know,
in and out of a lot of different groups. For Clark, you know, I think what it was that not only was he playing with the A team, you know, but he was able to be in a place where the idea of new music, new arrangements, bringing his own compositional ideas to the fore, and Ellington was very open to that.
Mm. So at what point does Clark Terry decide, you know, all these A-list teams want me, I should form my own team?
That's a very good question, because he actually steps out as a solo artist, as a leader in his own right, in 1955 for the first time for Verve Records. And guess who the producer is? It's Quincy Jones.
All right.
And they had met when Quincy was this wannabe teenager, just struggling to get real musicians to look at his arrangements and his charts and his ideas on paper and see if it, you know, made sense. And it was while Clark was with Count Basie that this relationship began. And the warmth and that openness that Clark had even back then to this teenager is the whole reason this documentary is being made even now.
Right. So the next piece that we're going to hear, this is Clark Terry from one of his own records called In Orbit with Thelonious Monk
Indeed.
At the piano.
You know, same year that he was reaching out to, well, you know, his interaction with the more modern jazz players, the hard boppers of the 50s, if you will, begins with Quincy, you know, bringing in Horace Silver, Oscar Pettiford, Art Blakey on that first album. And, you know, within the next 2 years, he's on Thelonious Monk's incredible album, Brilliant Corners.
Mm-hmm.
And then he brings Monk in. This is actually interesting because it's Monk's last sideman gig on record.
With Clark Terry.
With Clark Terry.
And Clark Terry is playing the flugelhorn here.
Indeed.
All right, let's hear it. This is actually the title track from that 1958 record, In Orbit. Thank you. In Orbit, from the album of the same name, 1958 album by Clark Terry, the trumpeter here playing the flugelhorn. What's the difference, actually, between the two?
Well, flugelhorn is a larger bore.
Right.
You know,
so it's a bigger instrument.
It's bigger, and the sound is, you know, a little bit more expansive and warmer and not as sharp.
So Thelonious Monk playing piano in this record with Clark Terry called In Orbit. And on the heels of our look at the documentary called Keep On Keepin' On about Clark Terry, we're speaking now with Ashley Kahn, the author, music journalist, radio producer, often heard on NPR's Morning Edition and an occasional guest of ours on Soundcheck to help make us all a little bit smarter about Clark Terry, who, you know, for a guy who's career is full of superlatives, tends to be overshadowed in pop culture by people like some of his students, like Miles Davis.
Exactly.
Like
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he was totally comfortable in a supportive role, and yet his greatness is there no matter what. His years with Duke Ellington were really only about 8 or 9 years, but for the rest of his career, he's paying tribute to Duke for that opportunity. Again and again, he's covering Duke tunes, and he's known as that Duke soloist.
And you also picked for us to listen to today a Ray Charles recording where Clark Terry, again, is in a supporting role. How did this happen?
It was an interesting connection between Ray Charles and Quincy Jones, of course, being coming up together in Seattle. And then years later, Ray is signed over from Atlantic to Impulse, and one of his very first Impulse records for the ABC record company was this jazz effort called Genius Plus Soul Equals Jazz. And it was mostly instrumental. It featured Ray on organ rather than piano, on a Hammond, the one and only time he recorded on Hammond, and charts and arrangements, at least on half of the album, by Quincy. And there's this incredible blues called I'm Gonna Move to the Outskirts of Town. And Clark had already had a lot of experience playing trumpet alongside vocalists with Dinah Washington during the 50s. But nothing compares to this stellar performance where Clark and Ray are basically doing a vocal duet. It just so happens that, one of them is on trumpet.
Clark Terry with Ray Charles from the album Genius Plus Soul Equals Jazz.
I'm gonna move, baby, way out on the outskirts of town. I'm gonna move, baby, way out on the outskirts of town. You see, I don't need nobody always hanging around.
That is some remarkable playing. Ray Charles featuring Clark Terry. I'm going to move to the outskirts of town from the Ray Charles record Genius Plus Soul Equals Jazz. And Ashley Kahn, that really is some... I mean, he's... Even when he's off in the background, you just like... You're also on the edge of your seat. Listen, what's he going to play next?
Exactly. I mean, he just had this incredible ability, still has this incredible ability to just make it sound like, you know, he's both making it up right in the moment, but what he has to say is so damn important that you need to pay attention to every phrase.
He's practically singing through the horn there.
Indeed.
But he is a vocalist of sorts. Tell us about the character / piece of music that is Mumbles.
Well, you know, Clark has a great, great, great sense of humor. And in my interviews with him in the past, you know, it was always like, you know, it was almost like friends. There was a joke a minute, you know, one of the things that he loved to make fun of were these hardly intelligible older blues singers that were part of the tradition. And he would do this just as a matter of course at sound checks, at rehearsals and whatnot, and then it becomes sort of like a centerpiece for him, a little showcase when he gets together with Oscar Peterson. And there's this tour that they do together in 63 and 64, and it's the Oscar Peterson Trio Plus One, and obviously Clark's the Plus One, and then they do an album together. And this has to be one of those timeless, timeless tracks that no matter how old you are, but especially if you've got that youthful spirit, you're going to totally embrace and love this moment.
So this is the pianist Oscar Peterson with his trio and with Clark Terry doing Mumbles.
You better get me, Oscar. You better get me, Oscar. You better get me, Oscar. You better get me, Oscar.
That is the Oscar Peterson Trio Plus One. The Plus One was the great trumpeter and, as it turns out, vocalist Clark Terry. Mumbles is the name of it. So Ashley, you know, Ravel came to hate his bolero because everybody wanted to hear, you know, and there are lots of bands that have like one song and everybody wants to hear that old song.
Absolutely. Every time that, you know, Clark got in front of a microphone, you know, it became something he had to do, yeah, at least for a while, you know. I think then it sort of fell out of the, you know, off the popular radar a little bit. But still, it was something that he was so closely associated with. And yet, you know, he's such a serious player at the same time. His chops, his talent are in such a high level that you didn't want to be, you know, overshadowed by a novelty tune, right, such as that.
Ashley Kahn's been here with us on Soundcheck today to make us all a little bit smarter about the great jazz trumpeter, who is 93 now, Ashley, and was putting out records into his 80s.
Well, he was on an album just last year, Terry Lynn Carrington's Money Jungle, mm-hmm, tribute to Duke Ellington again. And he does some singing and trumpet playing or flugelhorn playing on Floret Africaine on that track.
You wanted to leave us with a solo performance from an album that he did back in 2002. So he would have been like 81 at this point.
Right, right.
With the late, great drummer Max Roach.
Right. It's called Friendship. It's absolutely stunning album because it shows just, you know, no matter where they are in their career, the musicality is embedded so deeply that it just kind of like flows out of them, even if the chops aren't exactly on the same level and they're not able to hit it like they did. The feeling is so deep. I also wanted to show that, you know, as joyous and rambunctious as is his reputation, Clark Terry could also be so deeply sentimental and sober in the way that he would approach a standard like The Nearness of You.
And that's what we'll hear. Hoagy Carmichael's The Nearness of You. It's Clark Terry playing solo from this 2002 record, Friendship. And Ashley Kahn, the author and music journalist with us on Soundcheck. Good to see you again.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
That's trumpeter Clark Terry from his 2002 album, Friendship. Up next, the Malian singer and songwriter Rokia Traore plays a couple of songs from her latest album called Beautiful Africa, coming up next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The singer and guitarist Rokia Traore blends the sounds and rhythms of her native Mali with the American and European pop and rock that she grew up on. Her globe-trotting career has included collaborations with Damon Albarn of the Britpop group Blur, with the Kronos Quartet, and with the American novelist Toni Morrison, among many others. Her latest album is called Beautiful Africa, released last year on Nonesuch Records, and today, Rokia is here in our studio to play some songs for us, beginning with one called CK. It's Rokia Traore, live on Soundcheck.
Siginyogo njugo mana wili, odala kuma kone tinyena, bali majugo mana wili, ogo malankolo, singoro jugo mana wili, obeyele muse otabakono, hakana njugo ya, neme jugo ya, wakana njugo ya, neme nyininga joninde ichi, neton vanimbaye, akana yele mfeka nyakoro kokede kankoro tinye. Siginyo wanjugo mana wili okone horo nyamu nambio wawa Bali majugo mana wili kufali tebara emune wawa Nidung kana ndowe ya kana njugo ya Nimi jugo ya wakana njugo ya Nimogo bebara minke uke kanya denebi wawa Juru diri makasa masama ndende inka munebo Nebi wawa sunitelela nebi wawa Nebi wawa, nebi wawa, nebi wawa, kawawa de kawawa. Masima, mafinkila muna bejigena, nema jigila, ntijuwea, daganza te jombe nisira. Jombe nisira. Ma wili nima kana nejugo ya Nema wili nima kana nemisenya Ma wili nima kana kele ya na Kana kele ya na Ntasoma kana yele mfe kuno juguka Ntasoma kana yele mfe ngane ya juguka Ntasoma kana yele mfe nitemfe Ninjugu manyi, ninjugu manyi Kanya de nevi wawa Jirudiri makasa masamande ndain kamana bo Nebi wawa sunitelela nebi wawa Nebi wawa koroni telebiwa nebi wawa Nebi wawa kawawa de kawawa
That is Rokia Traore, live on Soundcheck, with a song called CK, which comes from your latest record, Beautiful Africa.
Yes.
Rokia, very nice to see you again.
Thank you.
So this song, it's sung in Bambara.
It's in Bambara, yes.
That's your native language. Mm. Is this autobiographical?
Yes, it kind of. To me, it's a funny song. When I started, and I wasn't supposed to be a musician, not because of traditional reasons, I'm not a griot, mm-hmm. but because of very modern reasons. My parents were civil servants, and you don't expect your children to make over choices.
Mm.
So for my dad, who introduced me to music, it was very hard for him and my mother to accept. And also in the area I grew up in, it wasn't common and very bizarre to people, this choice, and I was criticized everywhere.
Right.
So for different reasons, it wasn't easy every day, but even more interesting because of that. And I wanted to sing it and sing how glad and serene I am with what became my profession 18 years later.
So first of all, you're not from a family of griots, the traditional storytellers and musicians. Your dad was a diplomat, right?
Yeah.
So did that mean that you traveled widely? Did you go to many countries as a kid?
Yes, it was... I think I'm lucky because I like traveling.
Anyhow, well, and here you are in a business where traveling is very
And that's great.
Part of what you do.
Also, I like my work for that.
Yeah. So growing up in all these different countries then, it seems like maybe the traditional music of Mali was just one of many different things that you would have been absorbing as a kid.
Yeah, because my father was a big music fan. And traveling just gave him the opportunity to buy more blues. He was more classical jazz and blues. And I'm so lucky because I could listen to everything when I was a child.
Rukia Traore is with us in the Soundcheck studio. Her most recent album is called Beautiful Africa. And this next song, Sarama, is also on the record. You want to perform it for us?
Yes. So Sara mane muso dambe mane muso kembe bamako mbaka kene muso ni gibir muso ni mini dona bamako ale nyala tema sinni sogoya ale yele nyinte masinyala goya Sarabaula nebe foli bela musoye musoya akuma fobaka chande imaye musoya awaleke ba mancha chamana nyafuruso muso chamana dinyafuruso muso demana nyawolo ba muso Demana tinya wolo ba muso Kobana bau, fama bau ni nalo mauni Banabato wolo bagani uladumba ba Oh, Farafina muso, I miss your smile Every day they face their destiny Shirtless, barefoot, under the sun, women in Africa are strong. Oh, Farafina Muso, I miss your smile. I wanna hear your laughter. I admire the courage you face your destiny with. Oh, Farafina Musso, I miss your smile. I wanna hear your laughter. My inspiration is drawn from you. Oh, Farafina Musso, I miss your smile. Anything good I can do, anything good I can do, I want it to be a tribute to you, to you, to you. Mali Musso tamacho kanyi. Farafina Musso Sarabaula Mali Musso Tamacho Kanye Farafina Musso Sarabaula.
That is called Sarama, a song from my guest Rukia Traore, live here on Soundcheck, singing and playing the electric guitar. Her most recent album is called Beautiful Africa. You'll find a version of that song on it. Mali has been, for many years, for world music fans, a kind of Disneyland. There's just so much great music coming from that country. But in the last couple of years, it's been a very troubled nation as well. Where are you living? Do you still live in Mali?
I do, and I've never left, actually. I moved back there 6 years ago. Then a couple of years later, even before I finished doing what I'm doing as business, I have a foundation. We're building a concert place, and we started with great projects with Peter Sellers and Toni Morrison, who are people supporting us. And then this crisis started. And yes, I think it was difficult to imagine such a thing in Mali, not just for people living abroad, but also for us living inside the country. I knew the social political situation was a very complicated one, but I couldn't imagine us coming back to a coup d'etat after 20 years of democracy. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, I think Mali needs Malians who are able to trust in the country and bring their contribution.
Well, and it is part of the cultural heritage of Mali, the great musicians and singers like yourself, you know? And so
yes,
it's great
so I think
that,
most of us
great that you're still there.
No, yeah. I don't know any singer or Malian artist, I mean, in theater and arts in general, who left. Everybody is still there.
Rukia Traore is with us in the Soundcheck studio. Her most recent album is called Beautiful Africa. Rukia, this has been great having you here in this kind of intimate setting, solo, here on Soundcheck today. Thank you so much for playing for us.
Thank you for having me.
Do you have a song you could play us out with?
Warabana la farinya, oyela marala to de fe. Sabajugo mambe wula jankono, ofenena maraba. Mokela nya wanyama, jumbe ni dia nyeva. Waitinyela nya wanyama, ambena maraba. Kamunke, dia nyamunke mundima. Kamundi, dia nyamunke munkiye. Bolo baba bodima ame wakala bolo ganegeye ibodo nebiye ware mogo mimbi bolo la odumo bilidela obedide no mamama kumama nibama kogongo mankanka munke dienye munka mundima ofo kamundi na dienye munka munkiye. Yeah, yeah. Moye ke la jun le dim fa kamunke kone jonye ne de wala fanyu mala jondi ene jonye ne le wala banyu mala jondi aha one jonye ne yem wala denin la jondi ala ene jonye ne le furu genyu mala jondi o vena de ene la jondi sigi nyonyo la jonyendi kobali manyuma wala hiteri manyuma la jonlendi iye kamunke ndi anyamonka mundi mafo kamundi mimonka mungiye iye de anyamana wara nyadoma mwayeke la jonledi mfa kamunke yewe na imaye idu sudaye nisodia.
That's Rokia Traore with her song Kamunke, playing here in the Soundcheck studio. Tomorrow on the show, singer-songwriter Jill Sobule joins us, along with writers David Haydu and James Marcus, to talk about Dottie's Charms. That's Jill's collaborative album inspired by a charm bracelet. Plus, we'll talk with journalist and author Lydia Denworth about her book, I Can Hear You Whisper. It chronicles her experiences as the mother of a deaf child. We'll talk about cochlear implants, the deaf community, and the impact that deafness has on early education. All of that's tomorrow. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.